Sleds on Boston Common, A Story from the American Revolution, written by Louise Borden, illustrated by Robert Andrew Parker. In December of 1774, times were hard for all of us in Boston. Few good folk had coins to spare when they walked past the window of my father's shop on King Street. The best place to buy English and Dutch toys, spectacles, flutes, or the maps that my father drew with his own hand. Sometimes he let me color the maps with his paints and his pens. "In a few years, Henry, your steady hand will be better than mine." That's what my father, William Price, said. Months ago, on the first day of June, the British closed our harbor. By order of the King of England, George III. King George wanted to punish those in Boston who spoke against his laws that were made across the sea. Patriots like Sam Adams and John Hancock and other town leaders, and patriots like my father and my friends' fathers, all over Boston, south and north, people were not happy with King George III, or with our new royal governor, General Thomas Gage. General Gage was King George's top general, the commander of every British soldier in North America. Since May, he had lived in one of the biggest, tallest houses in all of Boston. Whenever my brothers and I walked to school, we passed by the red brick front of Province House. I always looked up at the weather vane high on the cupola, a gold Indian archer that shone in the sun. Thomas Gage was a powerful man indeed. On the day he closed our harbor, church bells rang in every colony in America. Other patriots and other towns said, "We will stand beside Boston in these hard times. We are all Americans together." Now, only the king's ships could enter or leave our harbor. And so there was no trade. There was little work for the men on Long Wharf, once the busiest dock in New England, filled with tall masts of ships that had sailed to China and to Spain, to the West Indies and back. Now there was only the salt smell of the sea and the cry of gulls in an empty port. Every day, there were more and more of the king's soldiers marching on Boston Common, or walking with a swagger in their bright red coats along the streets of our town, or cutting down our fences and our trees for their firewood. King George wanted General Gage to make sure that we kept his new laws and that we paid our taxes to England, every penny. My father said that by now there was one British soldier for every five of us in Boston. People called them lobster backs because of their coats. Most of us didn't like General Gage's troops in our town. Most of them didn't like us either. But King George's laws hadn't closed the South Riding School on West Street. No one had told our schoolmaster, Mr. Andrews, to stay home and not teach. So my brothers, Colin and Ben and I, still had to study our lessons each day, first reading, then writing, then arithmetic and navigation. One thing His Majesty King George couldn't stop was the winter snow in the colony of Massachusetts. After days of hard frost and ice, the snow fell for 3 nights in a row, fine and thick. Then, on my 9th birthday, the gray clouds blew out to sea, and the sun shone above the steeples of our town. It was the best kind of New England day, a day for coasting on Boston Common for any boy or girl who had a sled. And now I had my very own. It was small, but it was mine, made by my father's strong, steady hands, with slick beef bones for runners and a wood plank seat, a present to me at breakfast in a year of hard times. That morning at school, we practiced our handwriting in our copybooks. I had written the day's date 5 times for Mr. Andrews. 22 December, 1774. Then, just before noon, I tucked my copybook, pen, and inkpot under the back bench of our schoolroom. I grabbed my wool coat from a high hook. Other students at the South Riding School tramped home through the snow for hot bean porridge, but not Colin or Ben or I. We had brought our sleds to school. Our sister, Kate, was waiting for us outside the school door with 3 slabs of cornbread and apple jam. Some girls were afraid to go to the common because of General Gage's troops, but my sister loved to sled ride. We had to hurry. Mr. Andrews would expect all boys back for lessons at 2 o'clock sharp. We pulled our sleds along the icy ruts of West Street. The December wind was cold, and I was glad to be wearing Kate's old mittens and Ben's patched leather boots. We crossed to the common, a wide, hilly field with fine new snow and a frame of blue sky. We hurried on past the stark row of lime trees that John Hancock had given as a gift to the town, and past the town's wishing stone, but we had no time to stop and wish that King George would change his harsh laws. For over 100 years, the common had belonged to everyone in Boston. Now it was covered by the barracks of General Gage's troops. And they were everywhere, these troops, officers and soldiers, drummers and cooks. 3,000 of them, here on Boston Common, setting up their tents, carrying letters and orders, polishing boots and bayonets, drilling, marching. Everywhere across the common, my brothers and Kate and I heard the shouted orders of officers and the constant tramp, tramp of British boots. Our father had told us to listen with our eyes and with our ears every time we went to the common. Look sharp, but don't look like you're looking. Every patriot who thought King George was wrong helped out the Sons of Liberty in his own small way. Suddenly, I stopped and pulled on Colin's sleeve. Some of General Gage's soldiers had placed their tents and their cooking fires right in the middle of our sled runs. They had broken the ice on the common's ponds so no one could skate. And they had knocked down the snow forts the town boys had worked yesterday to build. We were steaming mad, all 4 of us. This was our common. These were our ponds to skate on. And there were no better hills to sled on anywhere in Boston. It seemed as if the British troops had made it their common. Now there was no open run to sled on, so instead, we walked among the barracks and listened with our eyes and with our ears. Ben began to count new sheds and tents and horses. Kate and I counted kegs of powder and barrels of fish. Colin counted officers, a group of local Boston patriots who opposed the actions of the British. They often met in secret to discuss plans for independence. Kate and I saw General Gage. He was right there in front of us, almost close enough to touch. He looked like a general, and he stood like a general. But he didn't look mean. Not like a tyrant who would close our harbor. Not like a bully for King George. And not like an old woman, as some Boston newspapers called him. He had slate-blue eyes and was speaking kindly to his soldiers who were setting up a tent. General Gage looked like a man who would listen, a good man, a man like my father. If I could just speak to General Gage for a few minutes, maybe he would help us. Maybe he would let us sled on our common. But I was just a town boy. General Gage was the royal governor. I'd have to be as brave as the Boston patriots who told the King of England that his taxes were not fair. I held onto my sled tightly and took a deep breath. "Hurry," I whispered to Kate. "Go find Colin and Ben. We're going to talk to General Gage." And so we did, right there in the middle of the common, with British soldiers all about us. I walked up to General Gage, tugged hard on his scarlet sleeve, and asked if he would hear a town boy's complaint. Some of his officers glared at me sternly and began to order us away, but the tall general turned and held up his hand to still them. Then he said, "Let this boy have his words." And so I talked, and General Gage listened. I told him that the Boston Common belonged to all of us, not just his soldiers. I told him his troops had knocked down our snow forts and ruined our ponds for skating, and that they had built their cook fires in the middle of the best sled runs. Then, with Colin and Ben and Kate right beside me, I said, "And it's my birthday, sir, and I wish to use my new sled on the steepest hill in our town. But I can't, you see, because of your men. And we have to be back at our school by 2 o'clock for our lessons." General Gage crossed his arms and looked out across the snowy common. His officers stood nearby with stony faces. No one spoke a word. Then, the general put his hand on my shoulder. He told me I had a fine sled and asked who had made it. "My father," I said proudly. He leaned down to inspect the other sleds. Then he stood up and said in a general's voice, "I'm a father as well as a soldier for my king. I have sons. And daughters, too," he added, nodding at Kate. "And I know my own children would like to sled this hill if they were here. But they're back in England in school." Then General Gage asked me my name. "Henry, sir," I said, standing as tall as I could. "Henry Price." "Henry," the general nodded. "That's a good name indeed." He shook my hand, man to man. "My oldest son is named Henry." "I'm the youngest in our house," I said. "You may be the youngest," said General Gage, "but you have the courage of a good soldier as well as the spunk of your local rebels." He turned swiftly on his heel to one of his officers. "Instruct all troops that they are to allow the town children to sled where they wish, and keep the ice unbroken in one of those ponds. Tell the men they are to clear a good run, and be quick about it. It's my young friend's birthday, and he needs to try out a new sled before 2 o'clock this day." I'll never forget the first time I came down that hill on a sled I could call my own. Down, down, down the snowy path beneath my runners, the tents and barrels blurring past, the red coats of soldiers rushing past, the wind on my face and in my eyes, faster, faster, over bumps and more bumps, straight through the sprawling camp of British troops till I reached the bottom of the common, then slower, slower, slow till I slid to a stop, never wanting that ride to end. Again and again, my brothers and my sister and I sledded down the best hill in Boston, and then dragged our sleds to the top, until it was time to hurry back to the South Riding School for Mr. Andrews' afternoon lessons. And from December 22nd on, Colin and Ben and Kate and I had other days of good sledding on the common. And skating, too, because General Thomas Gage was a man of his word. Spring came, and in April of 1775, the war for independence began after General Gage ordered his troops to Lexington and Concord. Our new country was at war, and the lobster backs in our town would soon be under siege. The next October, the good folk of Boston were glad when King George sent orders for his top general to return to England. Thomas Gage was the last royal governor of a colony that wanted to choose its own. On the night that his ship left Boston Harbor and set sail for England, I stood on Long Wharf with my brothers and Kate. We were Americans now, my family and I. We were Boston patriots hoping to win a war against a king, but we'd never forget the tall British general that we'd met on my birthday. General Gage had given us back a pond and our sled runs on Boston Common because he had children of his own. Indeed, he was a good man.